This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Well, letter six dropped this week. So let's get into it. This is an exciting one. This is, as he promised, he's going to tell us more about, I think, what, near-death experience number three and four now? Let's find out what happens.
And the countdown continues.
Moving up a notch, it's Chad Daybell, letter number six.
My near-death experience happened in the summer of 1993. 8 years had passed since I had jumped off the cliff at Flaming Gorge Reservoir. I was now nearly 25 years old. Tammy and I had moved to Ogden the previous year when I was hired as a copy editor for the Standard Examiner newspaper, and we now had a one-year-old son. Ogden is about a 90-minute drive from Springville, so we felt we were on our own, but still close enough to visit our families regularly. I really enjoyed my new job. I had been the city editor during my senior year for BYU's Daily Universe newspaper, but going to the Standard Examiner was a major step up. The company was a full-scale operation with a bustling newsroom and dozens of employees, and I was right on the front lines in producing the newspaper each day. This was an exciting time when computer typesetting programs were being introduced, but when I first started working there, we still actually cut and pasted the newspaper together. On the copy desk, we would design the pages, edit the stories, write the headlines, then send the articles to the production room. If an article ended up being too long for the page, I would be called to the production room to decide which part of the story to cut out. Then, with an X-Acto knife, we would literally cut the text to fit and paste it onto the page board. There was a lot of stress as the daily deadline approached, with people running everywhere and shouting to each other as we all tried to do three things at once. I would be editing a last-minute article on my computer, but listening for someone to shout, "Chad, get back here and cut this story," or "that headline isn't long enough, rewrite it." So the job was invigorating, and I was getting a hands-on crash course in writing, editing, and publishing. The 8-hour shifts went quickly because we rarely had time for a break. Since I had an interest in sports, I became the main copy editor for the sports section. I thrived in the excitement each weekend as we scrambled to get in all of the high school and college stories and scores before the deadline. On those nights, I usually designed each page and wrote every headline in the section. It was high pressure at times, but rewarding when we put together a great section. I got along well with my colleagues, and I expected to steadily work my way up the corporate ladder and remain with the newspaper for several years. Tammy had made some good friends in Ogden, and we enjoyed exploring northern Utah together. I was focused on my career and my young family. Then my parents invited us to join them on a vacation to San Diego, California. I had spent my first 2 years of life there while my father was serving in the U.S. Navy, and the area has remained a special place for our family. One spot we liked to visit was La Jolla Cove, where we'd play on the beach and look for seashells. When we arrived on this particular day, it was low tide and a jagged rock outcropping had been exposed. I climbed out onto the outcropping looking for shells that might have gotten trapped among the rocks. The ocean had been calm, but I suddenly looked up to see a towering wave bearing down on me. I had no way to avoid it. For a moment, I considered trying to ride the wave to the beach, but I knew I would surely be sliced apart by the jagged rocks. Over the roar of the approaching wave, I heard an audible voice shout in my ear, "Get down and cling to that rock."
Get down
I
and cling to that rock!
I grabbed hold of a nearby 2-foot-wide boulder just as the monstrous wave crashed down on me. The force was incredible, and it took all of my strength to not get ripped away by the water. Then my surroundings instantly changed, and I found myself out of my body inside a tunnel of light. It wasn't a bright white light, but more like a yellow heat lamp. It felt like I was wrapped in a warm blanket, and I felt extremely happy. I saw two men in robes standing about 10 feet above me in the tunnel, and I instinctively knew them. One was my grandpa, Keith Daybell, and the other was my great-great-great-grandpa, Finity Daybell. They had died before I was born, but it was like reuniting with old friends. I levitated up the tunnel to where they were, and the tunnel opened up into a room. They smiled at me, but they seemed to be in a hurry. Keith began speaking to me and gesturing with his hands. He mentioned my five children and the roles they would play in the future. It was a strange conversation, since Tammy and I only had one child at the time. Keith also explained the tasks I needed to accomplish in my lifetime. As he talked, I saw snippets of future events on a set of screens in front of me. The rush of images was almost overwhelming. It felt like they were being downloaded into my mind. Keith asked me if I would be willing to fulfill the assignments he had outlined, and I agreed to do so. Finally, he didn't speak because he was keeping an eye on my body, which was now tumbling among the rocks. I could also see my body, but I had lost all interest in it. I was too busy enjoying this family reunion.
What?
Then I saw Affinity give a nod to Keith, who made a motion with his hand. I was suddenly back in my body, which had washed closer to the beach. I felt wrapped in a soft, protective cushion as another wave propelled me over the rocks and onto the beach. I credit this cushion for helping me escape additional serious injuries. Then the pain hit me. I looked at my hands and saw my fingertips were shredded from being ripped away from the rock. The left side of my back had large, bloody gashes, and I had a deep cut on my chin. My family helped me to the car and took me to the hospital to be examined. I didn't have any broken bones, but I got a lot of stitches. This brief adventure out of my body felt like an urgent business meeting where Grandpa Keith poured information into me, while Finity allowed the meeting to go on just long enough before I would have drowned. It seemed like there should have been an easier way, but I guess they seized the opportunity.
I've been in some really bad business meetings, I guess.
Were you ever, what is it with Chad here and not learning his lesson on water sports?
It's a good point.
Why is it like he's constantly in rocks, in off of cliffs, and being torn away into the ocean?
It's a recurring theme with him, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like this man hasn't learned, and he's been lucky. I don't, like, why? Of all the constant ways of possibly dying, I don't know, maybe that's a more common one of, I don't know. I just find it interesting that he's constantly in water and nearly dying every time.
Well, do you ever have moments, dreams, things like that where you're actually going to die in your dream? I mean, I always do that with flying. I'm always in a plane and I'm the pilot and I'm always
if you're the pilot, we're all going down.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, we're all in a lot of trouble.
Have you ever? I've had death dreams where I've died. I mean, I don't remember exactly how, but you die in the dream. And then I've had one where I'm like literally in the casket and I can like, and they're like lowering me down. And then I hear like the dirt being put on top of it. And I'm like, wait a second.
I'm not dead yet.
That's a freaky thing. But actually that used to happen. That's why, you know, the old term saved by the bell for whom the bell tolls. Is one of it because they would put, before they could really fully identify if someone was dead or not, they'd have a string down to the casket. And if somebody, you know, woke up and they weren't truly dead, they could ring the bell and then you could dig them up and hopefully they still had oxygen. Finger. Yeah. Yeah. I wonder how many times those bells ring and then you're like digging and they're like, they're dead. But it just was like a fish after you catch it and it's dead and it kind of flops around a little bit.
And humans do that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wonder how many times that took place.
And I want to say this, trigger number three, ladies and gentlemen, trigger number three today, talking about dying, but not dying and bells on my finger.
You know, Chad was a gravekeeper.
He was what?
He was a gravekeeper. Literally, he worked the cemetery. He dug graves. That was one of his jobs as an adult, like fairly recent to all this stuff happening. That's what he did.
Did not know that.
Yeah. Add another one to the Chad Daybell category.
Write that one down.
Yeah. Let's keep going on Chad's letter.
I was pretty banged up, so Tammy and I decided to end our trip at that point and head home, On the drive back to Ogden, I told her about what had happened with Keith and Finity. She was very intrigued and started asking many questions. As she did so, the snippet pertaining to each question would play in my mind. I told her about the five kids, and she was happy about that. She asked when they would be born, and I explained I hadn't been given any dates, but I had seen we would have three kids in Ogden before moving back to Springville, so we estimated we had at least a few more years living in Ogden. Once we returned home, most of the snippets were taken from my mind, and even now I only have access to them on a need-to-know basis. Tammy and I wished we'd talked more about it on the trip home and found out more, but we would have one answer soon enough. Little did we know during our trip that Tammy was already pregnant with our second child and the third one would quickly follow. I had seen enough in the spirit world snippets to raise my curiosity about one future job option, but it seemed highly unlikely to happen anytime soon. During my sophomore and junior years at BYU, I had a part-time job at the Springville Evergreen Cemetery. During the school year, I would attend classes in the morning and work there in the afternoons. Then I would work full-time during the summer. Over time, all of my brothers also worked there, so it became a family tradition in a way. The cemetery sexton was Denny Pickering, and he supervised all of the cemetery operations. And these tasks included sprinkler repair, lawn maintenance, digging and filling graves, coordinating with mortuaries and headstone companies, and helping families purchase burial plots. I became Denny's assistant and took care of these matters when he went on vacation. In the summer, there was a 5-person crew to help maintain the cemetery, but in the winter, it was just the two of us. I shoveled a lot of snow. About 2 years after my La Jolla Cove experience, and soon after our third child was born, my brother called to tell me Denny had announced his retirement. The city was looking for his replacement, and my brother thought I might be interested in applying for the job, since I had knowledge and experience other candidates might not have. This would definitely be an unusual career change, but Tammy and I felt it was the right time to make a move. I interviewed for the position and was hired the next week. When things fell into place so quickly, we knew it was the right decision. So with our growing family, we moved back to Springville in late 1995. Bookshelf, the late 1980s and through the 1990s were a unique time when truths about the spirit world were being revealed from seemingly every direction. The Berlin Wall came down, and the rapid changes in the Soviet Union brought feelings of hope and peace as we headed toward the new millennium. A spiritual awakening emerged across the world as these life-changing events unfolded. Angels were a major topic of conversation on daily talk shows, and TV programs such as Touched by an Angel were very popular. Meanwhile, dozens of books about angels and visits from the other side filled the nation's bestseller lists. Many of these books were written by LDS church members who either shared their own personal experiences or who compiled the experiences of others. Here are some of the more notable spiritual books written by LDS authors during that time. Embraced by the Light by Betty Eady, I Stand All Amazed by Elaine Durham, The Message by Lance Richardson, I Saw Heaven by Lawrence Tooley, The Beyond the Veil series by Lee Nelson, Coming from the Light by Sarah Hinsey, Echoes of Eternity by Arvin Gibson, The Life Before by Brent L. Topp. After my second near-death experience, I devoured these books and many others like them. I felt I had discovered a group of people who could relate to what I'd been through. Each one of these books is excellent, covering heavenly topics from different angles, but with the same general theme of a vast world beyond this one. I later had the privilege of getting to know and work on books with Lee Nelson and Sarah Hinze. They are among the best people I've been associated with. Lee is a good-hearted, down-to-earth cowboy, and Sarah is a sweet, kind, thoughtful person. She's a true angel herself. Musical notes.
There we go.
Suddenly, after 3 years at the Standard Examiner, I was Springville's cemetery sexton at age 27. Although I'd been anticipating a transition back to my hometown after the birth of our third child, I was surprised at which job had opened up. I had been looking at jobs in Utah County related to my communications/journalism degree. I had actually been offered a position on the Provo Daily Herald staff a couple of months earlier, but it didn't feel right, and I turned it down. The cemetery job had been in the back of my mind, but I figured Denny Pickering wasn't going to retire anytime soon. Denny stayed on the job during my first 2 weeks to overlap a bit and answer any questions I might have. It was great to reconnect with him. My brothers and I always regarded him with great respect, but also as a wise guru, because he would share various sayings and phrases about life that were equally puzzling and profound. He would often tell us, enjoy. And that's it. No elaboration or explanation. If we asked, enjoy what? He would simply repeat, enjoy, and walk away. I finally decided Denny meant for us to enjoy each moment and appreciate life. So I pass on that message to you. Enjoy. After Denny's final 2 weeks, I was on my own. I tried to not feel overwhelmed at first. The Springville Evergreen Cemetery is very large with thousands of headstones. People sometimes think the sexton job is easy, but as I described in the letter, there are many responsibilities tied to the position. But I quickly adapted and enjoyed the sunshine and fresh air after sitting at a desk and staring at a computer screen for 3 years. The biggest change for me was being much more aware of the otherworldly nature of the profession. When I had worked at the cemetery during college, I hadn't had my La Jolla Cove near-death experience yet. Any spirit world interactions at the cemetery had been rare before, but now I could feel there were plenty of friends hanging out in the cemetery. When I was alone in the cemetery building, I often sensed visitors from the great beyond joining me. On bad weather days, I would work in my office to catch up on my record keeping, and invariably I'd soon notice the hair on the back of my neck standing on end. It was as if someone was leaning over my shoulder reading what I had written. I know these ghostly friends didn't mean any harm, and I would smile when I'd return from my lunch break to find my pen had been moved across the desk from where I'd left it. Sometimes I would arrive in the morning and see that my day planner was already turned to the correct day. That must have taken a lot of effort. I generally sensed 5 male spirits hanging around me. I understood they had lived in Springville many years earlier and had been friends during their mortal lives. They considered themselves the guardians of the cemetery, and I appreciated their help. But there were days when I just had to say, "Guys, get out of here. I'm trying to get some work done." And they would oblige. A few years ago, Rick Astley released a gospel album titled 50. Yes, the Together Forever singer from the 1980s, who is now well known for the Rick Roll internet phenomenon. The album is fun and joyful, especially the song Angels on My Side. Rick sings, "I got angels, you got angels, everybody got their angels on their side. Everything's gonna be all right." I dedicate the song to my cemetery friends from 30 years ago who watched over me, and also to my current friends who I sense are helping me and protecting me now. Yes, Rick, everything's going to be all right.
It's not that song, but it's Rick. Can we sing along? Are you all right?
She's taking my time. Convince me she's fine. But when she leaves, I'm not so sure. It's always the same.
Okay, we can do this one, or we can do...
You actually are a better singer than I realized.
Oh,
I
like, a great singer.
Yeah.
She wants to dance.
I don't know this one.
Woo! She wants to dance with me.
Remember this one?
Kind of like I'm going to dance with somebody.
This was like... There's a girl. Are we there yet? Oh, we're not there yet.
There's a girl I've been waiting to see, and I really, really get the feeling she likes me, cause she said so. But not so many words. I've got to tell you what I've heard.
It's been a long time since I've heard it.
She don't want no wild romance. When she's with me, she only wants to dance. She wants to dance with me.
There you go.
I didn't know he was that good of a singer. That was like, the reason why you don't know that one, Stacey, that was like third down in the singles. It only did fairly well, and then it never tested well after that.
Yeah.
We play the hell out of it, though.
I know that one. And also, what is the cry one that we
cry for help?
That's a good one. I love that song. That was my first radio station. We played the hell out of that song.
Y96 FM.
That's right.
I think I probably had the single, the actual album in my garage for many a years because I took all the 45s out of that building.
Probably.
No, I liked Rick Astley. I mean, I know everybody knows him for Rickroll, but he had some good songs. Anyway, now that we got to do a little Rick Astley karaoke this morning, Angels Among Us. I know this song, but I don't know it well. So there you go, tying in a little Rick Astley.
Can we try to guess who he's going to come up with next week for musical artist in the spotlight?
Yeah, I mean, he seems to hit the 80s a lot. So I'm going to guess we're going to stay there.
He's a Gen Xer. I can feel it.
So we've had, we had Whitney, right?
Yep.
Well, so we kind of had.
I feel like we need some heart.
Oh, he might go big and go Michael Jackson. What do you think? If he invokes Prince, I'm out. Yeah. You don't touch Prince, Dave.
That'd be great. Little Red Corvette or something?
No, I was thinking 1999. That's kind of like the Rapture.
Cream.
Pussy Control.
Pussy Control. God.
Come on. I actually listened to that the other day.
He's like, and then Tammy, I had to get Tammy under Pussy Control.
Billy Jack, bitch.
Well, I think anything is possible with Chad Daybell in terms of where he's going to go. Has any of this, let me ask you this, has any of this helped you better understand why there were children melted in buckets in his backyard?
Not one shred. How about you, Todd?
Oh, well, I'm sitting here going, this guy's nuts.
I think it explains everything. I mean, he's laying it out for us. I don't know where this, I mean, what I wonder about is because there's other people involved in posting these. Chad doesn't have the access to just post it, so I believe he sends it to one of his kids and they post it. What the hell do you think is going on in their minds?
And why does he think that he's so important that people want to know? Because this is just bullshit stuff that he's sharing with us.
Yeah.
Ghosts at the cemetery and he gets hurt in the water and all that kind of stuff. Like, why does he think that we want to know this, like anybody wants to have this information?
Because he's a narcissist. He thinks that we care about him.
But we're sitting here talking about it.
Oh, yeah, we are. There goes my argument.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's two things going on here. He thinks we want to know about it because it's going to lead to our eternal salvation, because Chad's going to tell us the way. And we want to hear it because it's utterly batshit crazy. And I think those two opposing things, they keep going, they end in the same way. And it ends with us listening to it going, this is crazy. But the outcome is different. Chad doesn't really get to see that part of it though. Gravekeeper. Would you ever take that job? It sounded like it was kind of a job that he was, just kind of took initially to kind of make some money, and then it ends up being kind of a career path for him for a while.
Well, it obviously played into his hobbies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, would you ever take that job? Would you be a groundskeeper essentially at a cemetery?
I can't imagine it would be like any other. I mean, it's a job. It's something that needs to be done. I mean, it's a little creepy, but it's, you take a look at funeral directors and, sometimes we cringe, like, how could you do that for a living? Mm-hmm. Well, it needs to be done. And it needs, a kind, caring person. Now, I don't know. Maybe he liked taking care of grass and things like that. It just so happens he liked dead bodies. He's a unique individual.
I think it'd be a pain in the ass to mow a cemetery.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. And that's why they don't like tombstones that are above the grass anymore. I mean, I get that, right? Families get upset about it. You can't leave tributes. I actually, the two things that I almost became was a pastor and then also a mortuary guy. What are they called?
Mortician.
Funeral director? I wanted to learn that whole thing. But then you had to go to school for a long time, and I'm not really a school kind of person, so I got into radio instead.
What drew you to the idea of being a mortician?
That macabre part of me that likes the spooky and the odd. And I do like helping people genuinely, But I think there's just that creepiness that goes along with it.
Well, had you ever had any experiences like with bodies up until that point? Okay.
No. It was kind of from afar. I think there was a time in my life where I had a lot of death in the family, a lot of grandparents and uncles and aunts dying and stuff like that. And you're kind of sitting there going, this is kind of interesting, you know, and maybe that was the whole pastor thing too, where it was, you know, I don't know. I mean,
you are helping people.
What did you say, Stacey?
The mystique of death. You know, it's something that you don't know much about. We don't really learn about it. I know I had a class in, oh gosh, must have been 10th grade. We went and toured a funeral home. I remember being thrown into the back of a hearse by a guy named Paul. Paul is a very sweet individual. He didn't mean anything by it.
Obviously, Mm-hmm.
But that kind of scarred me for a long time. Sorry, Paul.
You got thrown in, and this was on like the class trip to the funeral home?
We went into the garage where the hearses were, and Paul's just this towering individual. He's like 6'2", 6'3". Uh-huh. And he picked me up. I'm only 4'9", picked me up, threw me in the back of the hearse and shut the door.
How old were you?
10th grade.
Oh, wow.
So like what, 15?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It was effing terrifying. And like, cause there's no latch to get out, guys. Not
God,
in that.
They probably
hearse,
don't need that, do they? Yeah.
So I had to crawl to the front and get out that way. But the whole time it was just like, oh my God, I was just where the bodies go. And so it scared me a lot. And I had a little bit of a fascination with death after that.
It's an interesting class trip.
Yeah. What?
It's an interesting class trip.
Right? Well, like, we did a lot of weird. We toured cemeteries. And yeah, it was, I think it was like a lifestyle class. Like, we cooked and sewed and then went and did shit like that.
We had like that, but had nothing to do with like mortuaries and death. And so, we did sewing, and then there was like a cooking unit, and then there was, I don't know, something else that was domestic-ish in there. But wow. I wonder, because I remember a lot of class trips. It was usually because somebody's parent worked there or owned the business. Yeah. So was one of your classmates, did their parents own the funeral home or whatever?
No, we just went to one of the biggest ones in the Twin Cities. And then we toured, I think it's called Lakewood Cemetery. I could be wrong, but there's a ton of celebrities and big, big business moguls buried there in Minneapolis. That's quite the mecca for big names. I mean, like, I think Pillsbury's buried there. Maybe the founder of the Martin
Pop and Fresh. The Pop and Fresh guys buried there.
Right? Yeah. He comes out at night.
What's that? What's this weird sound I'm hearing from the mausoleum? And then suddenly Snuggle Bear comes out of the ground too. You're being chased by a cemetery with Snuggle Bear and the Pillsbury Doughboy.
So in my defense, though, I will say that shifted then into ghost hunting and paranormal interest. But that really wasn't available when I was younger, because the ghost hunters weren't out and all that kind of stuff. It was Ed and Lorraine Warren, and everybody thought they were weird. So wanting to be a pastor or getting into the mortuary business was my way of, you know, kind of dealing with that side of my life. Yeah. That was kind of weird.
Kind of dealing
with where you are.
Yeah, I mean, you're dealing with death, but also seeing how it provided a service, because funeral services, they, you know, and morticians and all that, it is a kind of macabre job, but if you're in it for the right reasons, you're doing a lot of help to a lot of people in a very, very difficult point in their life. Unless, of course, you own Back to Nature in Colorado.
Oh, there's that.
And you're putting hundreds of people on defunct Kmart shelves in your mortuary until they turn into goo. Then it's not quite as Back to Nature as you want it to be. But definitely an interesting career path. I can't say I've ever wanted to do any, I don't know. I've never wanted to do anything like too odd. I've wanted to do radio. That's all I've done. So I can't say that, but I can say, I don't think it would be a bad job to go over and be the groundskeeper at a cemetery. I enjoy walking through them. I always have. I've enjoyed hanging out. There's actually a cemetery right down the road for me. And it's one of those, it's like, it's in the middle of the city and it's been there since there was no city. And you can tell it was once a country cemetery and all the graves in there are way beyond anyone visiting because the people who would have known them are also dead.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad because it gets really grown over and people have gone in there with their own lawnmowers and tried to, you know, take care of it. But the problem with it is this is not a flat stone cemetery. This is old. So I think a lot of people go in there with the right intention. And then five blades later, they're like, maybe there's a reason we don't mow in here.
But almost need a weed whacker.
You do. And you need Chad Daybell. You need more Chad Daybells out there. Taking care of it, listening to Rick Astley.
Well, with his ghosty experiences, I'm surprised you haven't had him on the Ghost Story Show. You should see if you can get him for an interview.
Chad?
Yeah.
Why not? I'm sure that's, you know, go sit down. Maybe him and Lori together. We could all sit together and have a couple coffee together and discuss the dead. Well, there you go. Chad Daybell. Let's shift gears for a moment, but I think maybe I'll ask Bob here in a second. Bob Mata joining us, defense attorney, host of the podcast Defense Diaries. We were just wrapping up a conversation about Chad Daybell, listening to his letters. Did you know Chad Daybell is a big fan of Rick Astley?
I did not.
Yes, we learned that in letter number six. So we did a little karaoke this morning. I'm sorry you missed that.
Yeah.
It was kind of fun.
Not as sorry as I am, Tony. Not as sorry as I. Hey, Stacy, how are you?
I've been jamming out to some Rick Astley. Life is good, man.
We found out this morning that Tony's a damn good singer, Bob. I didn't know that until this morning.
Didn't you know all of us deep, like bassy guys can all croon a bit? It's like it's our secret weapon. People just don't know it about us. So it does not surprise me at all.
I have this microphone. If you're watching us on YouTube, it's this Shure 55. If you've seen any images lately, it's the old retro looking microphone. I love this mic so much. I bought a second one and it's in I have a movie room over there, which we use for karaoke more than we do movies. And it's all set up there. So I croon Rick Astley into that quite often.
I bet you do.
By myself with the pets while Harper goes, I'm going to bed.
Security cameras, what you do when you think nobody's watching.
We don't put security cameras in the karaoke room. What happens in the karaoke room stays in the karaoke room.
Like Vegas. I hate to expose my ignorance in terms of Rick Astley, but what's like his go-to like number one song that like everyone would know from them?
Never Gonna Give You Up.
Oh, Never Gonna Give. All right, I'm with you.
Yes, never gonna give, never gonna give you up. Yep. Rickrolled.
All right, I'm with you.
Yep.
Okay. Oh, Bob, we almost had to disconnect you, man.
Oh man.
Almost had to let you go.
Glad we got that under control.
Oh my God. Yeah, that surprisingly, that does not shock me that Chad was into that.
We've learned his musical taste. Whitney, we got the whole list. So we'll have a chat.
Van Halen, he's into Van Halen too.
Van Halen, Oingo Boingo, another one of his. There's a lot on the Chad Daybell playlist.
Oingo Boingo during the that great run of like 80s movies, was pretty prevalently used in a lot of soundtracks back then.
Yes. You know?
So.
And it's the soundtrack to Chad's life.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers podcast.